This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
What's up, peeps? Welcome back to Rebranding Safety. Today we're talking about
that Irish article. Yeah, that one.
You know which one it is. You must know which one it is. Today we're talking about investigative interviewing. I'm really a bit nervous about today's intro, today's conversation. Let's get into the intro and we'll get into it.
Safety isn't deviation, it's complexity.
Health and safety has gone mad.
Health and safety is trying to unpick having gone mad in the past.
There's no one solution or one problem. The problem is that we are looking for one solution.
Does the structure of the team allow them to flourish?
Feel safe enough to be uncomfortable.
The environment defines our behaviours.
People aren't the problem, they're the solution.
Rebranding Safety, crushing the stereotype. Brought to you by Risk Blue.
Okay, let's do this. Oh, I'm nervous. I'm real nervous. This could go horribly wrong. Right, if you haven't read the article, then where have you been? If you haven't seen the subsequent debates on LinkedIn, then where have you been? Get yourself on LinkedIn, start reading the magazine. I don't really read the magazine, if I'm honest. I just read shit that people share on LinkedIn. Let's just give a shout out to the sponsors first, and then we'll go from there. Yeah. So, firstly, I'm like mega nervous about this. There's a lot of contentious feelings around this debate and this so-called debate anyway. And I am very aware that at the base of this there is still a human being. So anyway, let's get into. I'll touch on that more in a minute. Let's get into the sponsors for this. Let me turn this down a little bit. Okay, firstly, a little shout out to Paradigm Human Performance, and more specifically, the HSC subscription service. You've all heard this many times before, but those of you that are SME businesses, you may be a safety professional for that SME business, or you're probably, you know, more likely in those really small businesses, you're more than likely going to be an operational professional, and safety is normally something that you're conscious, you care about, but actually with all the plates you're spinning and all the balls you're juggling, you know, it's not something you've got time to really focus on. And do you know what, don't beat yourself up about that. That's life. That really is life. But Paradigm Human Performance HT subscription service has the solution for you. It's a monthly subscription service. It's targeted at companies like yourself to try and help you out, to try and put worker safety at the DNA of what you do, to try and help you understand and appreciate and benefit from the subject matter expertise of the worker. Paradigm Human Performance's global goal is to just educate people, man. They are phenomenal. And this is a human organizational performance expert business. So the compliance system you've got is going to tick all those legal, regulatory, industry compliance kind of boxes. But it's going to be like decluttered already. It's going to be human organizational performance streamlined. It's going to be woven through it. So it's literally the perfect answer for those small businesses that are looking for some extra support. So all the details in the description below. There's their phone number, email address. You want to go straight into it. If you're not sure, I'll put the website there below and you can get onto their website and check into their learning organizational webinar, which is absolutely class. Everyone should be just going on that anyway. It's every Thursday, reams and reams of quality educational content. But also, if you're thinking about going into business with them and employing them, then you can meet them. You can meet the whole team. You know, there's the America side and the UK side of the organization on that webinar, so you can have a real good insight into Paradigm Human Performance. Go check them out, people. I would not have aligned with them if I didn't really believe and trust and just feel what they are doing. I just totally get it. Great company. And Teresa, the CEO and founder, no, not the CEO, the director and the founder, is an absolutely amazing lady. Okay, one last shout out to Paradigm. I've already done Paradigm. One last shout. You can tell I'm a bit nervous about this, can't you? I had to have like a well, I say I had to have. I had a little glass of cider just to loosen the lips a little bit, get the nerves going. And I'm starting to regret it already because this is more loose than ever already. And we're like 5 minutes in. Just a quick shout out to Project Miletium. Project Miletium is my and Colin Nottage's little company, little commercial venture, so to speak, little side hustle. If you want to call it that, what is it? It's a mastermind community for the safety people, for the risk people, for operational people that deal with risk and safety. It's what it says on a tin, people. You know, it is a mastermind community. We have weekly calls, weekly community calls, where we're solving people's problems. The community's coming together, solving each other's problems. We're now about to launch on the 14th of July. We're going to launch a monthly philosophy call, which relates really nicely with today's conversation. It just shows how much we're lacking these philosophical understandings of philosophical conversations, which we'll get into today. Also, we run a book club once a month, and we run a quarterly wagon wheel, which is a massive mastermind event, basically. 3.5 hours, Saturday morning, 8 a.m., smash it out, get some uber motivation, uber goal setting, uber educational shit, and then off you go, enjoy your Saturday, once a quarter. Of the members we've got, they're loving it, but you know what? You're not going to believe that until you're in it. So why don't you just come and try a call completely free of charge? Message me, James McPherson, or you come message me on Rebounding Safety. You'll get hold of Colin Nottage or message us at Project Miletium as well. All the details of everything, how to connect with me, Project Miletium, Rebounding Safety, all in the description below. So go check that out, or show notes, because it's a podcast. Okay. Let's get into it. I'm going to take a breath for a second. All right. Let's do this. So, there is an article published in IOSH, okay? I'm not going to talk about today the subsequent article published by IOSH, which is called Hide and Seek. I'll do a separate episode on that because I've got some comments about that. This article was published on their website. Anyway, it was in a magazine as well, but on their website, Thursday, the 1st of July, how to conduct an effective accident investigation interview. It says Andy Farrell, chartered member of IOSH. Now, my experience with IOSH and their magazine writing, this alludes to it being written by Andy Farrell, but actually it's not being written by Andy Farrell. Andy Farrell was interviewed by a journalist and the article was written by a journalist. So essentially this article is kind of ghostwritten based on the interview. I think that's something to take in context here. Whilst Andy would have proofed the article normally, and he may have not, but I've not had any indication that he hasn't. He would have had a proof to, he would have had a chance to proof it. But that's just something worth considering. This is not actually his writing. So today I'm going to get into some notes I've made about this article. I'll link the article in the show notes, but if you want to search it outside of that link, it's how to conduct an effective accident investigation interview, or you can just go onto my LinkedIn page and you'll see it in my posts and comments, literally all I've been doing all week. Okay, so firstly, there's just something to kind of point out here in that, there we go. Andy Farrell, chartered member of IOSH, is classed in this article classed as a health and safety investigator. Never come across that before in my entire career, other than somebody who works for the HSE. But okay, maybe that's something for us to consider. Maybe that is a specialist role. I'm thinking back to that video I did where we talked about those three different types of safety professionals, a kind of more compliance-focused systems auditor kind of person, a more human factors cultural kind of person, and a more engineer person. Maybe this is another specialist role within your team if your business is big enough, if your resources are big enough to have a specialist investigator. If not, and for the rest of this conversation, I'm going to assume it's the if not option, then we need to do better at training, which I'll talk about later on. So I would like to say in this article, I am not criticizing directly Andy's writing, because as I pointed out, it is not Andy's writing, it's the journalist's writing. For those of us that really want to understand Andy's point of view, we either need to talk to Andy ourselves, which I'm trying to do on the podcast. Hopefully he's going to come on a podcast and talk to me. And Andy, if you choose to listen to this, and I really hope you do, mate. Granted, my comments might have got a bit too passionate, a bit overtly passionate, and I might have, in my usual style, swore a little bit in my comments. But to be honest, that is my style. I'm just a sweary kind of guy. But I would like to publicly, in front of my own audience, apologize for you if you did get offended by any of my comments, which I know you did, because you kind of pointed it out to me on LinkedIn, and I respect that. And I came back to you, and I apologize for offending you. I had no intention of doing that. That my passion for this subject got the best of me, so to speak. So again, publicly in front of my own audience, I apologize for offending you. I had no intention to do that. And I openly invite you onto this podcast to have a healthy discussion about this, because I think I see Rebrand Safety as a place to do that. I actively actually approach people that I don't agree with, because I find those conversations much more interesting. And I think it's something that we don't do very well in our profession, is have healthy conversations with people we don't agree with. And whilst my behaviour on LinkedIn might not have reflected that, I can do that. I believe I can. So please accept this as an open invite to come on to Rebrand and Safety, Andy. I will now go into the article that you're involved into and go through my comments, of which most of them don't agree with your writing. But I, again, think that's healthy, and I should do it in the most professional way I see possible. Okay. Like a minefield. This is nearly as bad as the diversity mini-series I'm building at the moment. I have no intention of really upsetting anyone, but I am very aware of my own passion, my own frustration with the organisation that published this. So I don't want them to get mixed up with Andy and I don't want anyone else to kind of feel that they're getting the criticism that actually I feel is due to the organization that published this. So let's get into my notes. The first paragraph, I'm going to start off on the first paragraph. The first paragraph reads, contrary to popular belief, the aim of the accident investigation interview is not to find who is guilty and who can be blamed. It is to discover the truth of what has happened. Once it is known, measures can be put in place to stop it happening again. I completely agree with that statement. We are not there to find out who is guilty. I don't think that's our job, and I think a lot of safety science will agree with that. I think a lot of safety science supports that, and I think a lot of the direction that safety science, human organizational performance, whatever you want to call it, it's safety two, safety differently, resilience engineering, blah, 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 it all agrees with that. I think it really does. For me, the interesting point here is truth. And I'll read that again. It is to discover the truth. So our job is to discover the truth of what's happened. For me, truth is an interesting choice of words, one that's come up in the subsequent debate on LinkedIn. You know, and this is where I think these philosophy calls of Project Miletum, which actually, I will pause there. It's worth me saying here in this podcast that my comments in this are not the Project Miletum comments. This is the Rebrand and Safety podcast. This is James McPherson's thoughts and opinions. Project Miletum will be doing something about this article, because we feel like it's our place to add something to the conversation. So we will be doing that, but we'll be doing it from a Project Miletum account. So you'll understand very clearly this is their thoughts or their content and so on and so forth. And by they, I mean me and Colin and the community of our membership. So, yeah, right, all that crap out of the way. Truth for me is a really interesting choice of words. Truth is something that's relative. It's to my point of the kind of thing that we lack within Project Miletum, within the industry, is what we're doing in Project Miletum is philosophical conversations, and that's why we've spotted it in Project Miletum. We've gone, we need to provide a solution there, and us and Simon are trying to do that. And I know that Simon does a hell of a lot of work on this stuff in his spare time. So ask yourself the question, what really is truth? Truth is, for me, in just my opinion, it's something that's really personal. Like, truth is relative. You know, there's some people out there that believe it's true that the earth is flat. There's some people out there that think it's true that God's writings are the truth. And they think that there's some people out there like me that think that science is the truth, are stupid, or we're liars, or we're removed from reality. Truth is very relative. Very relative. For some people, God is true. For some people, science is true. And who am I to say that just because I believe in science, that the people that believe in God are wrong? And who are they to say that I'm wrong? It's relative. So, I think when we're thinking about talking about the truth, I think truth is also not relative. I think truth also evolves. I mean, for God's sake, we used to dunk women underwater to see if they were witches, for God's sake. Truth is not only relative, but it's evolving. Therefore, I would ask the question, is the safety professional really competent to find said truth? I would also ask, is it our job to find the truth? Which I'll get into later on. I feel that this sentence here contradicts the first paragraph. This is a sentence in the second paragraph. It says, because the interviewee might have something to hide. So I'll read the whole paragraph. Unlike the management interview, where the manager drives things forward, in an accident investigation, the interview dynamics can be totally different because the interviewee might have something to hide. But in the first interview, we said our job is not to find who's guilty. But we are very aware that they have something to hide. So I feel like our lines of responsibility within this process are getting skewed very early on in this article. We're not really sure what we're trying to achieve here. I think for me, that's what I can read here. I do note also in the first line of this paragraph, unlike a management interview. So the author of this clearly sees a difference between a management interview where the aim is to drive things forward in an accident, investigation. They see that as totally different. So there are two different types of interviews in an accident investigation. So I think that's another bit of context there for us to consider. I'm going to scroll through into the next section, which is entitled Preparation. The room itself must be somewhere quiet. Police interview rooms are quite Spartan for a reason. You don't want anything to distract the interviewee. You want them to concentrate solely on your interview. Now, I've made a comment here, and I'll read it out straight away. Kind of raw, you know what I mean. I won't paraphrase my own notes. Whilst we can learn from police interviews, can we really copy the style of their interviewing? Just think about that for a second. I'll give you some music conducive to concentrating. That's really not conducive to it. To interviewing? Oh man, I'm all over the place. I'd like to blame it on the cider, but I'm like this all the time. Conducive to reflecting. That's what I meant to say. Let's just think about that again. Whilst we can learn from the police, can we really copy their style? Where do you think I'm going with this? I wish you were here. I wish you were in this conversation so you could kind of bounce off of it. For me, I think it's because the police system, the interview process, the investigation process of the police service is completely different. They are literally there for retributive reasons. They are there to find someone to blame. They literally exist to find culpability. The police service does not exist to stop something happening again. Whilst they might learn and they might then take those things and proactively, well, actually that's incorrect. They do exist to stop something happening again. Of course they do. And they'll put the laws in place and so on and so forth. But my point is that in the interview, their primary focus, and I'm not a copper, I'm not an ex-copper, so I have no idea, but I'm going to stab a guess. Their primary focus is to catch the person that did it. But we just said in the top paragraph, our aim is to not find who's guilty. So why, if that's the case, why are we taking our full inspiration on how to set up the room from police interviews? I just think this is messy. I just think we don't really know what we're trying to achieve here. Modern day science is taking the safety profession from retributive over to restorative. It's taken us over to a learning position. Whereas for me, this article is very much focused on retributive, very much focused on finding somebody to blame. Okay, I'm going to scroll on to the next section, which is called Weighing Up the Evidence. And it says, when it comes to assessing evidence, follow the ABC protocol. Accept nothing at face value. Believe nothing without checking it and check everything. Now, I kind of get what the author is saying here. We want to get as much context as possible, 100%. But for me, I think it's the tone, which, and again, this is what's come up a lot of the time in these subsequent interviews. Accept nothing at face value. Okay, we're gonna go and check it then. We're gonna check everything. It's the tone that's written in. Like, surely the interviewee's experience, their account of that experience is their account. That is a fact. So if that account contradicts with other facts, e.g., no, I didn't walk down there at 2:05, and then we know the CCTV has shown that the employee walking down there at 2:05, we would maybe say, what about the CCTV though that shows that you're walking down there at 2:05? Like, try and explain that to me, buddy. Accept nothing at face value really doesn't sit well with me. Like, the tone of it doesn't sit well with me. I think if their statement contradicts from what we deem as, well, it contradicts another fact, I'm going to avoid using the word truth because I think truth is relative. But so if one fact, e.g. their statement, contradicts with another fact, e.g. CCTV, then the combination of those two contradicting itself becomes a fact. Does that make sense? So this contradicts with this. The fact they contradict is a fact. Both facts are facts. But if one contradicts with the other, it becomes a fact itself. The contradiction becomes a fact. So it's gone from two facts to one fact. But you might say, but that guy's obviously lying, so how is that a fact? Well, it's a fact that he's lying, isn't it? Therefore, that statement is a fact. Whether it's true or not, whether he or she is intentionally misleading the truth or unintentionally misleading the truth, they wrote that statement and the statement itself is a fact. I hope that makes sense, but that's where I'm coming at from at this. So, like, for example, if I'm doing an accident investigation, that becomes context that we then look into. So we're going through this process, we're collecting as much data as possible, collecting the context. And then later on, we're going to come back to all the content and pick text and pick some of the bits out that are more significant, and we're going to kind of 5-why the shit out of that stuff to try and find a root contributing factor to that context of the incident, if that makes sense. So for me, the tone again is an issue, but for me, I think this whole concept of the truth is confusing the matter, in addition with we're not really sure of what we exist for, what we're trying to achieve. I think at the top we say we're not trying to achieve to find somebody guilty, but actually throughout the whole document, I think that's how it reads. Okay, moving on to the next section. Next section is called body language. I've highlighted a paragraph that reads as follows. As you question the interviewee, watch their reactions. You may find that the person who has been looking in your eye suddenly won't look in your eye after one particular question. On its own, that's not an indication of lying. They might be simply thinking. Instead, look for clusters with two or three anomalies all happening at the same time. For example, they're no longer looking at you in the eye. There's a significant change in voice and they're now crossing their arms. It's not a guarantee there's something's going on, but it's a sign of something to follow up. This for me just shows the naivety of the body that the organization's magazine that this is from, in my opinion, or even the laziness. I'd go so far to say the laziness of it. Just have a think about you're an organization You're the CEO of an organization that represents the profession that you're writing this material to, and you do not provide currently training courses that allow you to do these types of interviews. You're very aware that our educational system, e.g. our qualifications, don't provide that type of skill either. And you write a statement like this. As you question the interviewee, watch their reactions, you may find that the person who has been looking in your eye suddenly won't look in your eye after one particular question. On its own, that's not an indication of lying, but they might be simply thinking instead. Sorry, I messed that sentence up. On its own, it's not an indication of lying. They might be simply thinking. Instead, look for clusters of two or three anomalies all happening at the same time. For example, they're no longer looking in your eye, there's a significant change in voice, and they're now crossing their arms. Just have a think about that. Like, that's not enough. That's not enough for me to be able to tell someone the psychology of someone's body language. Just read that one paragraph and all of a sudden I'm a fucking expert on body language. Even if you read a book about it, it's not enough. Jesus Christ. Like, I just think that this is so either lazy or naive or just downright stupid to publish a comment like that when this is really, really complex. There's loads of evidence, scientifically speaking, I've been led to believe by people that I know that work in the police force, to say that the eye left and right stuff is a load of bullshit. Which, to be fair, they kind of allude to, where they say, you know, it's not an indication of lying on its own. I kind of get that. However, this stuff takes years of training. Years of training. So even if, which I don't agree with, but even if we did exist to catch someone out and find out if they're lying, our current educational system is nowhere near enough to allow us, to enable us to do that. So I don't think it's the fault of even the journalist writing this or the author of the original text, e.g. the book. I think it's ultimately the fault of our educational system within our profession and our current representation of our profession that do not give us the skills we need to actually do our role, or don't even do any work to actually define what our role really is in the modern world. Moving on to the next section, length. I've highlighted the second paragraph in here, which is the last paragraph. It says, so give them a break, but try not to let them go for a walkabout where they can gather their wits. Politely offer them a coffee or a sandwich in the interview room, and of course, let them go to the loo, but keep the impetus going. I mean, Jesus Christ. So give them a break, but try not to let them go for a walkabout where they can gather their wits. So we're not even letting these people out of the room now. Like they're arrested or something. We are not the police force. Like this, that line for me was the worst one. That is the one that really made me uncomfortable. It really made me uncomfortable. Again, Andy, if you're listening to this, and just my opinion, mate, I am really happy for us to repeat this episode, going through it. I'll make my points and you can kind of come back on it. I really am happy to do that. And I'd love to hear your kind of feedback as well. I wholly disagree with that line. I think that is one of the worst for me. We work so hard in the safety profession to build relationships and to build psychological safety in the workplace. And this is literally advising you to keep somebody, to force as much as you can, is to try and force somebody to stay in a room and then not let them out. Oh, it's just uber stressful. And I just think it destroys relationships. And I just think, I don't even think we have the right to do anything like that. I think that line for me just makes me so uncomfortable. It makes me more uncomfortable to think that people are going to think that and go, yeah, that's right. When I'm interviewing somebody, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to let them out of the room. Yeah, that's, we are not coppers, man. We are not coppers. We are safety professionals. We are not police officers. And we are not professional interviewers trying to catch who's guilty. Okay, I'm going to skip the next section, which is called the peace process, because there's nothing in there that I overly disagree with or have any kind of significant agreement or comments on. I'll move to the next section, which is dynamics. So I've highlighted the second paragraph. Oh, it's come through the second paragraph on my document. Let me see if it is. Yes, it is second paragraph. It says here, I recommend using a softly approach. Rather than saying the interviewee isn't being clear, be apologetic. Say it's your own fault when you can't follow. Don't offend the interviewee. Give them the excuse to leave the room and rethink. Don't offend the interviewees. That will give them the excuse to leave the room and rethink. Again, don't give them the excuse to leave the room and rethink. Like, these people are like proactively trying to mislead us. Like, seriously, if we think our jobs are that fucking important to some people, like, get over yourself. Like, there's loads of fucking work out there. And maybe we're like, they're actually trying to protect their mate, which did something which ultimately ended up in somebody being fatally harmed or seriously harmed. Maybe they're trying to protect themselves so they do want to lie. Maybe. But maybe that's because they think that you're going to blame them in the first place, which comes to the pre-existing culture of that organisation. If they've been negligent, like if that person's been wholly negligent, that's very different. It's very different. And it's not our job. It's the HSE and police force job to do that stuff. It is not my job to find out who is guilty. It's the police force's job. Why? Because if someone's been negligent, a person, not a company, if a person has been wholly negligent, they've been wholly negligent, therefore they're at fault, meaning like they just drove the forklift into Steve because they thought Steve was a prick. That is not my job to find that out. And in my experience from conversations with people, a lot of the time, the police force and the HSE will tell you not to investigate, that they'll take over. You won't even get a chance to do this shit. So, if you're not in a situation where the HSE are involved, or the police force are involved, then why are we treating it like it's something out of fucking line of duty? That's what just doesn't make sense to me. And the whole thing is kind of messy. We're really not, like, what's the context of this environment? Are we interviewing somebody because they slipped up? Are we interviewing somebody because they drove a forklift into Steve? It's not a one-size-fits-all. And in my honest opinion, I don't think that this size fits any, but that's just my opinion. I think there are a lot of stuff we can take from this, maybe. Little tips and tricks, or maybe even the original author's expertise. Like, I'm not questioning that in any way, shape, or form. The guy's like a proper, experienced kind of police force, elite, interviewer, detective, whatever. I don't devalue any of that experience at all. I just question whether it's right for our profession. But mainly my issue with this is the tone. Like, don't let them out. And again, the tone might not be the intent of the author, the original author, e.g. Andy. It might not have been his intent for it to come across like this. We don't know. You would only know if you read his own writing, which is book, which I am going to do as a result of this. I bet his sales have gone through the roof. Moving on to the next section, conversation management. Point one, interviewee stage. The subject tells their story in their own time without interruption. If they drift off topic, bring them back gently, but generally let them talk. As they speak, make noise to indicate you are actively listening and they should carry on. The more they talk, the more information they reveal, so keep them talking. For me, again, this is just an issue with tone. The most of this paragraph makes sense. A lot of it I agree with. I'm not a fan of calling them subject, but anyway, let's just forget that. The human, let me replace it with the human, with feelings, tells the story in their own time without interruptions. If they drift off topic, bring them back in gently, but generally let them talk. as they speak, indicate to you, to them, that you are actively listening. I completely agree with all of those points. It's the last line that completely changes the tone. The more they talk, the more information they will reveal. So keep them talking. It just changes the whole tone of it, which it doesn't change the whole tone because the whole article is written in that tone. But it comes back to this, we're here to catch you out. But yet at the top paragraph, it says we're not here to find out who's guilty. So what are we here to do? It's just a direct contradiction there for me. Skipping on to the last summary paragraph of that same section, politely pointing out where details don't match up means the lying interviewee now has a problem. So let me just kind of point out the bit before. So I've just read the interviewee stage, right? Then there's step two. It says the investigator stage, right? And then there's the challenge stage. So the challenge stage, step three, that's the bit just before the line I just read out. I'll read out the challenge stage for you. Challenge stage. You reach the decision that you believe them or not. Does the story hold up? Does it make sense? If so, say thank you very much and take a statement. If not, move on to the challenge stage. Polite, and then this is where they go onto the line I just read out. Politely pointing out where details don't match means the lying interviewee now has a problem. This is a huge jump. We have just gone from challenge, which is this doesn't line up with that. Your statement doesn't line up with that. You said this, CCTV says that. We're now calling them a lying interviewee. They are full on liars now. And the next line says they've got to try and patch up any cracks with another lie. These guys are full on liars now. They're not confused. They're not misplaced any information. They're not in shock or stress, but they're straight up liars. I just think for me, that's a massive jump. That is a massive jump for me. For me, the tone really goes down from here. When we finish off this section, it says, probably actually one of the most uncomfortable lines in this. And I know I said that about one of the others a minute ago, but this is just one of the most uncomfortable here. Or is it? No, it's not. It's the one that's later on. So anyway, let me get back to a point. I was jumping ahead. This the tone really goes downhill from there. So let me read it out. That's what's called the cognitive load. And that's when you can get people tied up. The more challenges you put in, the more they've got to lie, and the more complicated it becomes for them. We are full on in gotta catch 'em all mode here. We are full on safety professional here to catch the bad guy mode. Like, Jesus. Whew. Right, let's crack on. I've wrote an explicit in my notes here, but I'm going to try not to say it out of respect for how sensitive this conversation is. Next section is common mistake. A classic mistake is to say, I know all about this. I've got all the witnesses. You can just come clean. A frightened person will admit it, but somebody who has got all their wits about them will say, well, if you know all about it, there's no point in me being here. I'm off for a cup of tea. I mean, that paragraph, just how it reads. A classic mistake is to say, I know all about this. I've got all the witnesses. You can just come clean. What the fuck? Oh my. Like, is this a fucking bill or something? Like, I feel like I'm about to go, Mary, Mother of Christ. That's a terrible Irish accent, but you know what I mean. If you know, you know. You know, I feel like I'm sitting there with Kate and Steve, and I'm the Irish one in the middle who's just about to say, we've got ya. It just doesn't make sense. I feel like, what are we? We're in The Bill, we're in Bad Boys, we're in Starsky and Hutch or something, we're in Line of Duty. I feel like this is, it's just somebody who's watched too many cop shows. That's what it feels like to me. I understand that that's not Andy. I understand Andy's background is vast. It's experience. I get that. I'm not denying that. But that paragraph, to me, for somebody who isn't as experienced as Andy, somebody that isn't as experienced, the journalist has wrote that, and it's just going to encourage people that watch fucking Line of Duty last week. They're going to be like, yeah, I'm Steve Arnott, and I'm going to go in and I'm going to catch these people out. I just think it's dangerous. I think it's really dangerous. Moving on to the next section, which is called Liar Psychology. Ugh, Liar Psychology. Oh my God. As if they just wrote that in massive purple writing on their magazine. Ugh, Liar Psychology. The first paragraph says, you may be told things you know aren't true, but that could be an honest mistake by the witness. Normally, people correct themselves and slightly adjust what they remember as it becomes clearer. One indicator of a liar is that they can recite the whole story top to bottom with no mistakes. So hang on a minute. One indicator of a liar is that they can recite the whole story from top to bottom. So fuck me. Even if I've got a good memory, I'm a liar. I've just been... Is that because you've just spent the last hour trying to catch me out? So therefore, I'm really experienced in being caught out? So I'm like a professional organizational terrorist or something? It just, yeah, I don't know. Anyway, I said I was going to try not to get too passionate about this. This is the line. This is the line. This line's been quoted, but this is the line. Bounce all over the place. Asking them questions. Let me get this right. Where's the comma? There it is. Bounce all over the place, asking them questions, as this will send their cognitive load through the roof. So it's telling you as the interviewer, you need to use your questioning is to bounce all over the place, asking them questions from all over the place. And that's going to send their cognitive load through the roof. It's going to send their cognitive load through the roof. Let me just get you the definition of cognitive load. In cognitive psychology, the cognitive load refers to the used amount of working memory resources. There are three types of cognitive load. Intrinsic cognitive load. So can't speak today. Load is the effort associated with a specific topic. Extraneous cognitive load refers to the way information or tasks are presented to the learner. And germane cognitive load refers to the work put into creating a permanent store of knowledge. So how your brain works, basically, right? To withdraw information, remember information, store information, right? So we're going to send their cognitive load through the roof. To me, that just sounds like stress. You're going to send their cognitive load through the roof. Just makes you feel uncomfortable. If someone's cognitive load goes through the roof, that's really hard to say, surely they're stressed. And I think here at this point, we really have to remember that if we as safety professionals are doing this, in this moment, we still have a duty to that person we're interviewing because they are still our employees. Whether they're lying or not, it doesn't matter. They're still our employee and we still have a duty to protect their health and welfare. See, I'm no psychologist. I'm no legal expert. I'm no expert in psychology, investigating or anything like that. But for me, this opens you up to be sued under the civil courts at least. It really does. You're purposely putting a person in a position of stress. And you're literally designing the environment. You're structuring your conversations to, quote, send their cognitive load through the roof, e.g. stress them out. So then we move on to the next paragraph. Another option is to ask them to tell their story in reverse. Again, very stressful. Starting with the incident and working backwards, you could explain that people remember more details this way, so you're not trying to trap them, but if they're lying, it will show. So we're not trying to trap them. What are we trying to do? So we're not trying to find them guilty. We're not trying to trap them. What's the point of this article then? I just think we really don't know what we're trying to achieve here. If we're trying to catch someone out, if it's our job to find someone who's guilty, fair enough, this article makes sense. If it's not our job, then this article does not make sense. But this article doesn't even tell us what we're trying to achieve here. It said at the top, we're not trying to find someone guilty. Here it says we're not trying to trap someone. But yet, throughout the whole thing, it's designed to try and catch someone lying and to find the truth. What's the difference between finding someone lying and finding the truth and not trying to trap them and not trying to find someone guilty? It doesn't make no sense to me. It makes no sense whatsoever. I'll move on to the next section. Question and taken and statement, it's called. After the interview, you must take a statement. This is the most common mistake I've seen in very serious accidents. So there they're saying that the person, the interviewer, must take the statement themselves, not the interviewee. For me, this is the clear indication of the issue that we don't even trust people to write a statement. We don't even trust people to give us an account for what happened on the day. We don't trust them at all. I think it shows that there's an assumption that the safety profession knows better than anyone else, which frankly is something I've been trying to move away from for about 10 years. So it's painful for me to read stuff like this. It brings us back to me being positioned as the expert. What gives me the right to be positioned as the expert? Because what? I've done a knee bosh for 2 weeks? If this is where we want to be, then it needs to be harder to become a safety professional. It needs to be a much more stringent experience and educational route to get us as a qualified safety professional. Because I'm telling you now, I am not qualified to do this. I am not competent to do this in any way, shape or form. So if this is what I see as my role, it's incorrect. I'm incorrect in being here. It's one or the other. They're incorrect or I'm incorrect. I should not be in this profession. So which one is it? What is our job? I mean, if we've got to consider here, like, the state of stress this person's in. Like, when you're under a state of stress, your blood is pumping to your arms and your legs and your lungs and things that make you ready to fight or flight, right? And we're asking them to recount these stressful experiences, e.g. tell me about when you drove a forklift into Bob. Like, that's stressful on its own, and we're creating a very stressful environment. And then, well, no wonder we don't want them to fucking write down their own statement. I wouldn't want them to write down anything. They're in a period of stress, not going to be able to think straight at all. A period of stress. I mean, a state of stress after going through a period of stress. And then we're asking them to recount that period of stress. It's messy, man. Very, very messy. Right, I'm coming to the end. Last point, and then I'm going to go through my closing points. The final line of the article. Any competent health and safety manager should be able to achieve this, but it requires them to refocus and be aware of the potential and unusual circumstances they may face. I completely, vehemently, passionately disagree with this whole line. We are not competent to do that, and I think it's naive of IOSH to write this article and say that any safety manager should be able to accomplish any of that. I actually think it might be strategic of them. I think it might be a shameless attempt from IOSH to plug their own competency framework that frankly, clearly falls far short from the required finish line as to a that achieves a competent health and safety professional. I think we have no clear idea as to what that is. Therefore, there's no way that we can achieve a clear and correct skills framework, because we still don't really understand what the safety professional actually is. I think there needs to be some kind of ethical and philosophical conversations need to be had there as to what defines a safety professional, what are our ethics, and what do we exist for. But ultimately, I think it's shameless. I really do think that's shameless. After reading all of that, we're taking an article from somebody who's had extensive, if you look at Andy's background, he has had extensive experience in incident investigation, police force investigation. And now we're saying that any competent health and safety manager should be able to achieve this. No way. I've been doing this 10 years. I could not interview somebody like that. Never. And if that's wrong, I'll quit tomorrow. But I don't think it is wrong, because I don't think that's our job. I think that's a shameless attempt to them to say, yes, our competency framework is correct. Anyway, moving on to my closing points. For me, there's one still remaining question here, which is it our job to find the truth? And if so, what is true? Because I need to know that if I'm looking for it. This article and the subsequent debate for me highlight some very clear and serious issues. Things like, do we still really not have a grasp of what the safety professional is? Are we police officers? Are we an internal police officers? Are we these kind of empathetic coaches that the kind of so-called new view position us as? Which one is it? Or is it both? If so, then there needs to be separate skills frameworks for both. Our qualifications and skills framework, as I've alluded to several times, are not fit for purpose. They do not cover the skills required for us to carry out the role. And finally, I think it shows how far out of touch bodies like IOSH are from the current science that is being published for our profession. I would just like to finish on that, a very clear caveat, the same as the disclaimer at the end of this, that these are my own opinions, my own comments on this article. They are not reflective to any of the organizations that I'm involved in, other than Rebranded Safety. Rebranded Safety is my podcast, my YouTube channel, and I use it to reflect my opinions and to use it as a channel to communicate everyone else's opinions. And they are only opinions. Some are based on facts and some are based on science, but ultimately they are that person's opinions and thoughts. That is it. It has no reflection on any of the organisations I represent. Project Miletium will be doing some work around this, and I'm working to get Andy onto this podcast to hopefully hear his side, because I think that's very important. I think that we also need to remember, within our LinkedIn comments and within our debate, whilst this is a passionate debate, and whilst I have been very passionate through this, I mean no offence to Andy. I'm just passionate. I mean no offence to the journalist that wrote this. I'm just passionate. But ultimately, we need to hear both sides of the story. IOSH have been extremely quiet on this, and it's very important we hear their side of the story. And that is why I offer the place to Andy as well to come on this podcast. And if anybody, like Duncan Spencer, for example, who has issued a response article, which I asked him to comment on LinkedIn, wants to come on this podcast and discuss this as well, I'd happily have them both on here together or separately if they want to. We'll make it bonus material. We have got content booked all the way up to the end of the year, but I'm happy to put that out as bonus. But ultimately, everything that we said in this podcast is my own opinion and has no reflection on any of the organisations that I represent. Thank you very much, everyone, for listening. I'll be interested in your comments. Again, I understand this is a very passionate and sensitive debate. I meant no offence to anybody, but ultimately, I am very passionate about what we do, and I do a lot of work to try and help us be better as a safety professional. If you would like to get better yourself, then I genuinely believe that Project Miletium is the place for you. It's a mastermind community for health and safety professionals. We would love to have anybody and anyone, because we welcome dissent, we welcome conversations, or we welcome cognitive diversity. Even though the word dissent is a bit sensitive in this debate. So if you want to try it out for free, DM me or DM Colin Nottage, or just email us at me@projectmiletium, or just contact me anywhere, and including our website as well. There's a little form you can request a free of charge trial there as well. So you can come on one of our weekly calls completely free of charge if you want to try it out. And don't forget to check out Paradigm Human Performance, HSC subscription service for those of you that are small, medium-sized enterprises looking for a little bit of support, whether it's Kickstart or whether it's just ongoing support, they can help you out. So please check them out. All the details in the description below. Thank you very much, everyone, for listening. I'll catch you next week. Safe. Oh.
The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the host and its guests and do not necessarily reflect the position of the companies. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are examples only based on limited and dated open source information and should not be utilised in real life as the only solution available. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the companies. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, or otherwise, without prior written permission from James McPherson.